Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Rootscast. I'm Jeff Daverman, the creator of Root Concepts, owner of Infamous Network, and we are here discussing the ideas behind Root Concepts and how it applies to the lives of our fan base, the people that we work with, and the folks who love what we do and want to use our artwork to express themselves and succeed in their own artistic endeavors.
Hello again, everybody. This is Jeff Daverman, and you have tuned into another episode of Rootscast. I've been on a little hiatus over the last few months. We haven't done an episode, but this is a really good time to get back into it because I have a special guest with me here at Never Better Studio. His name is Doug Howarda, and he's actually my uncle. He is here visiting from a long ways away, and we've been talking about doing this for a while. Once he got here, we were going to get him on the mic, and because he's got a bunch of great ideas. He's a great influence of mine, somebody I really admire and respect, and I'm really happy to be able to share his wisdom. So how you doing there, Doug?
I'm great, Jeff. Thanks for the introduction. Yeah, we've been talking about this for a while, and particularly picking up on some of the things that I wrote and contributed a few years back. So
right
here
on.
We are, looking forward to it.
Yeah, so before we get into that, let's just, why don't you give the audience a little bit of a background and mention that you live far away, you're here visiting, so why don't you give me a little background there?
Yeah, I live in Hanoi, Vietnam, and I work there as a psychotherapist. I was trained and worked in the States for a number of years and decided to travel, which then turned into picking up an opportunity to stay and live and work there. And here I am 8 years later, and I have to say it's been a great part of the adventure of my life to live over there and to bring my services and, you know, my passion to people who are in need there.
So what is it exactly that you've been doing over the past couple years there specifically?
Well, probably what you would call a private practice as a psychotherapist. So people have been able to find my contact information, and I have an initial meeting with them to kind of assess what it is that's going on, and then we decide together what kind of therapy and amount of therapy that I'll offer them. And by therapy, I mean talk therapy. What we would think of as counseling.
Okay, so I know that you've been doing that for a while, and you've been doing it in Vietnam now for the better part of 8 years, right? Can you just give me an idea of, you know, a couple of the big takeaways of your experience being a therapist in Vietnam over the past few years?
Well, one of the things I'd like to talk about is, you know, some of the themes that I see in people who are seeking out help. Depression and anxiety are probably the two things that most people come to talk about. And ultimately, what happens is we explore deeper into what are the causes, or what are the things that sort of are the deeper layers of these issues. And I've discovered some themes that seem to be repeat. And so part of what I'm doing now is to take those themes that I work with the individuals around and start to want to put them out to a larger public, because I think they're relevant and poignant for most people. So that's one thing. I would say the other is that living in a culture that's on the other side of the East-West divide offers a great deal of interest for me and my curiosities around Eastern ideas and how that translates into how it is that people live is something that I'm cherishing. And while certainly I still have more questions than I do answers. I think I've learned an awful lot about Eastern thought, the influence of Buddhism and Confucianism, and the roots of what we think of as being Eastern thought.
So you've been doing this therapy as counselor there in Hanoi, but you have lots of these other ideas that it's part of the reason why I really want to have you come on the show is because we've talked about so many of your ideas that you've been able to apply as a counselor, and then you're wanting to do some writing. You're wanting to actually consolidate these ideas in a way that is going to be tangible to greater public, anybody who's interested in it. And that writing, I know that you've done writing, you know, over the past, whatever, couple decades even, but something special to me is that back at the end of 2014, you did some writing for my blog at neverbetter.com. And you did a four-part series. And the first one was called Will, Emotion, and the Force of Idealism. And I think that was something that was really powerful to me. I'm really proud to have that on my website. And I think there's some of the bases of the ideas that you're going to try and expand into around this book and all of that. So if you wouldn't mind, just go ahead and kind of summarize what you're talking about when you talk about will, emotion, and the force of idealism.
Yeah, it's interesting how it is. Ideas take shape and then morph or expand into a broader concept of what it is that I would want to communicate. And I wrote things several years ago in the form of essays, and I think what the point I'm at now is that I'd like to expand these ideas into a full-fledged book. And part of the impetus for that was that some of my friends in Hanoi have, in the midst of conversations, have said to me, is that written down? How can I learn what it is you're talking about? And so with the support of some other people, I decided to put together a lecture series, and it has now then become a framework for which I'm planning to write my book, which I'm setting aside some time over the next 3 months to focus and concentrate on that. And some of the things that were written in those essays several years ago are still powerful themes that are going to be included in the book. One of the strong things is a concept that's related to emotion, which of course is something that's relevant to everyone. And in maybe I should put a framework around that. The book has four parts, and the first part is called Begin Within. And it's really...
Hey, where'd you get that idea?
Yeah, it's also a sticker that Jeff has. And it fits perfectly because I think it's very important that we understand what it means to have self-knowledge and self-awareness. And the things I want to talk about in that part of the book are some very specific things that can be really helpful for people to understand themselves.
Why don't you give me a couple examples? What do you mean when you say begin within, and what does that look like? A couple examples.
Well, the first one has to do with, we could call it self-awareness, okay? And one of the things that we can always work to improve is being aware of what it is we're feeling, what our emotions are. And it's surprising at times to understand how people can sometimes not even know what they feel, not even be able to name the emotions that they're feeling. And aside from that, it's not only what it is we're feeling, it's how strongly we feel it. So it's the level of intensity that becomes a very important part of the kind of self-awareness that helps us to regulate our choices and understand how our emotion impacts our behavior and the things we might say. So it's a big emphasis in the beginning of this book to gain awareness over how it is that we behave differently when we are emotionally intense, and the impact that that has on us than if we're calm or relaxed or we're more emotionally regulated.
So I'm wondering if you can link those ideas, and let's just come back to the ideas around will and acceptance and the force of idealism.
Well, so a second part of the first chapter has to do with the concept of will and the degree to which the application of will is, on one hand, how we solve problems in our life and how we overcome obstacles and how we attain goals and how we live up to things that we can imagine for ourselves. But on the other hand, particularly in Western culture, we don't recognize that sometimes there's a limitation to will, when we find ourselves frustrated by our inability to accomplish what we set out to do, it generates a set of feelings: frustration, disappointment, anger, anxiety. And for people who are particularly dependent upon that ability to apply their will and produce the outcome that they desire, it becomes a real threat to them. Their emotions can become very intense, and yet they don't know how to regulate or manage those emotions. Perfectionism is an example of how it is that people set standards and then find themselves frustrated with the times in which they're unable to live up to something that they have come to expect for themselves. So will is a very important thing to understand, because out of that application is how it is or when it is that we generate a lot of emotions, and particularly the ones that are the most difficult to understand in ourselves. A lot of anxiety comes out of a belief that I should be able to gain the impact or the outcome that I have set out to do. So therefore, it's very important for us to understand the counterpoint to will, which is acceptance. Primary control is the psychological term which applies to the application of will. Secondary control is the term that's used when people come to understand the limits of their will and they let go of being in control of that process and come to a state of acceptance. It's the balancing between what we can do and what we realize we can't do, where our limits are. And for many people, it's a very important thing to learn, and many people are suffering in the process of not knowing that. So on one hand, we have emotions and emotional intensity. On the other hand, we have these built-in mechanisms where these things play out. And I might add, it's actually often pretty high-functioning people who find themselves very frustrated or anxious or pressured, who use power and control as influences, because they come to believe that their will is something that's strong enough to overcome any obstacle.
Okay, so I'm wondering then, how does the force of idealism, and you mentioned also emotional regulation a couple of times, so I wonder if you just talk about the force of idealism and how that relates to will and acceptance, and then also tie back in emotional regulation, just because I know that's a really important aspect of what you are trying to get across here.
So a third part of chapter one has to do with understanding both the value and the threat that ideals or idealism has for any one of us. Human beings have a remarkable capacity to imagine what it is that we would want. Okay, and that's done in what we would call the hypothetical domain. It's what we can think up, what the ideas that we can generate, and it's part of our imagination. And most of us who dream or have ideas or ideals want to follow and attain those dreams. And part of it is how we generate standards for ourselves or goals and plans and purposes. So there's a whole lot of things that happen in our mind and in our imagination that generates outcomes that we would desire. Where it becomes problematic is when we apply expectation to those hypothetical ideas. So if we expect things to be the way we can imagine them to be, we're inevitably going to be disappointed. Okay? And for many people, they find themselves in a situation where they're judging the inability to maintain or attain those ideals as some kind of a failure. And so what I like to do is juxtapose the model where we could say that the hypothetical exists in a cloud, and yet we live on the rocky road of reality. Reality is always the place where what we would hope for or plan or imagine or dream for ourselves has to meet the truth of the way life is, the variables that we don't consider when we're imagining them, the things that might be obstacles or the influences that might be unrealistic when we think of it only in hypothetical terms. And when we live from a place that's more grounded in reality and we aim towards those things that are more ideal, more hypothetical, then that becomes our guide rather than the source of our failure. If we get that paradigm upside down, we're always looking at ourselves and life as being not what it should be. And yet when we turn it around and we say, okay, let's accept the way things really are and let's keep our eye aimed towards our ideals, the hypothetical, the plans and the dreams and the ideas that are possible, first in our imagination and then in ways in which we can manifest them.
So it sounds to me like there's a bit of the power of positive thinking aspect to what you're, you know, saying there, where a lot of the direction that you go has to do with, you know, what you think about the direction, what you think about what's going to happen, without having necessarily an expectation, though. That's the downfall, right?
Yeah, the best case scenario is for us to be very clear about what our values are, our hypothetical considerations for what is possible. The key is to apply it in real terms. So when we hold true our higher set of values, it presents a guiding influence in our life. We try to live up to those things that are most possible. As you said, the power of positive thinking. Unfortunately, especially in Western society, we get carried away with our will. We get carried away with our the should of what it is we believe as
well,
our.
And it sounds also like a lot of comparison mind, you know, there's a lot of comparisons because you look around at in this culture, everybody is exposed to everything in a way. And so if you are somebody that, you know, can only see, you know, vicariously through media or whatever, something that isn't attainable, you can understand how that could get depressing, and no amount of your forcing your will, you know, is going to actually get you where you, what you see, you know, what the direction you wanted to go, potentially, I guess. And it seems to me like that would be not really the case in a country like Vietnam. Is that true?
Well, it brings up an interesting conversation because I think what's happening around the world is the exposure through social media and through television and all the kinds of media exposure is that the things that we have aspired for in the United States and probably in Europe are things that are increasingly being seen as desirable in places that only, you know, not long ago were considered third world countries. So on one hand, there is a modernization of those traditional cultures that is looking more and more towards a set of ideas or aspirations that reflect consumer culture and materialism. But what you do see is there's still a large percentage of people for whom opportunity is never something that is widely considered. The limitations of their place in the world allows for them to survive and even survive in ways that are lacking in suffering or hardship, but don't inspire the imagination to be thinking beyond what it is that's within the realm of their reality. And so you see a lot of people who are really quite contented in the culture that they have for themselves, which includes family, relationships, work, and their survival needs being met, food and so, yeah, there is something to be said about how much our imagination kind of feeds into a sense of our own inability to live up to it. And I think American culture is particularly involved in goals and dreams and ideas and attainments that are outside of ourself.
Well, so here's the thing, right? I mean, so you live in a culture that's on the other side of the planet that's, you know, you say that there is Western influence that continues to increase, it seems like, but there's still a very deep culture there that isn't just going to get replaced. And when you're talking about these ideas of will and acceptance and around idealism, my question is it everybody does have the same needs, the same basic needs. All humans have the need for safety and the need to, you know, feel loved and validated. And so I'm assuming that what you're talking about here is a universal thing, but within that, is there anything? Is it the same emphasis, regardless of what the culture is, because the basic human needs are the same, or?
I would say no. I would say emphasis is a good word to take a look at, and I would say that most of us are born into a culture or a social set of norms that we are largely unaware of because we're socialized in the context of that culture, and those things are sort of permeate our experiences. And I think it was only when I moved to another country that I saw how different these things are. I would say that if we're looking at it through the lens of this model that I've been talking about, will, and the idea that we can affect and change and influence the world we're in, I would say that that largely lands on the western side of the east-west divide. That and there's many good things that have come out of that. You know, America is very well known for initiating,
yes,
inventing, discovering, creating,
yes,
change,
innovating, and pushing. You know, this
right.
is very much a competitive culture, where a culture like Vietnam is much more communal. Is the emphasis a little more on acceptance
Absolutely.
In that culture?
Acceptance would be woven in. Even the word fate is something that tends to come out of the notions of Eastern thought. And so rather than looking at the world in terms of the problems to be solved, there's a larger response that might be thought of as acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the truth is I sit in a position where I think each side of that divide can gain and learn from the other.
Yes.
I don't see one as being the right way or, you know, the wrong way to go about life. But I think there's a moderating effect that both sides could benefit from. There's many things in Vietnam that to a Westerner looks like passivity. It looks like, well, why don't we solve that problem? Why don't we pick up the garbage more? Why don't we improve some of the things that are social issues or social problems? But on the other hand, in Western society, we've functioned so strongly from a position of pushing towards change and thinking that we have the solutions to all the problems that exist, that in many ways we can see now that we've generated a lot of the problems that come as a result of that. And so, finding a balance that has to do with acceptance. And, you know, I think there's a psychological or emotional aspect of this that I think is quite important, because I think on a social level, you know, what we just said is very true. But on a personal level, one of the best ways to regulate our emotions is to recognize when it is I'm getting frustrated or I'm getting angry or I'm getting anxious over something that actually is beyond my control. And the sooner I realize that I have to accept something that's beyond my control, the sooner I diminish or dissipate the intensity of those feelings.
So let's just, we've covered a lot of ground tonight, so I'd like to just kind of conclude around the idea of control and how that relates to the balance of will and acceptance, because it seems like it's kind of all about that, right?
Uh-huh.
So what do you think?
Well, there's a prayer that's quoted by Alcoholics Anonymous, God grant me the serenity. So God grant me the peace to accept the things I cannot change, the strength or courage, depending upon which one, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I think this is largely what I'm interested in trying to promote, is ideas of wisdom, or how it is we come to understand what's in our best interest. And you know, it's not to diminish the degree to which we can influence things, and it's not to diminish the importance of what it means to maintain an equanimity, a serenity, a sense of peace in the way we go about things. I think this is a key notion in the book that I'm working on. And
so control, then, when you're talking about the Serenity Prayer, I mean, that basically is understanding what it is you control, what you don't control, and that's where the wisdom is.
That's right. Making peace with the place that neither negates the importance of our showing up to an experience and having the influence we can realistically, and also realizing that we're living in a much bigger mystery, a much bigger set of questions that we have not yet evolved into the answers. And it's in that balance that we attain our highest set of ideals. So it's realizing that peace and fairness and compassion and forgiveness and concepts that have endured time are always part of how it is we come to function in the world.
All right, that's fantastic. So we're going to leave it there for tonight. And thanks again, Doug, for participating in this. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Good news is Doug is actually going to be around for a little bit yet. So we're going to try and get a few more sessions in and have a few more podcasts and continue to expand on some other ideas and other things that we've been talking about. So we'll catch you next time. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for listening and being a part of what we're doing here at Root Concepts. If you were inspired by what you heard, click the link in the show notes and enter your information so we can send you more great messages like the one you just heard. Until next time, this is Jeff Daverman signing off. Thank you for listening. Peace.